content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Anna Dean Silver from the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Out in the Garden. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from the Timber Press Guide to Vegetable Gardening in the Southeast. And this is by Ira Wallace. And now we'll start from where we left off. And we have here is good soil preparation is where we're going to start off. And it is critical. This is your chance to improve soil texture and fertility. Don't rush sowing and miss your chance to really give your plants a good start in life. First, properly amend your soil with compost and other nutrients and loosen the soil using your desired technique. Finally, before sowing, be certain you rake the soil to a fairly smooth surface. A few passes with a garden rake should do the trick. This will help prevent seeds from washing away, ensure that your plants are all on the same level, and make weeding with a hoe easier later on. After you sow, cover the seeds with fine soil to the recommended depth. Be careful here, as this can be very, very shallow for small seeds that benefit from some light. Finally, press down firmly so the seeds make good contact with the soil. This keeps the seeds moist by capillary action, which helps the water travel through the soil. And here are the basic methods for direct sowing. To sow in furrows or wide rows, I run the corner of a hoe the length of the bed at the desired depth. Using a string pulled tight between two stakes as a guide to keep your furrows straight and spaced properly, then seed at the desired spacing. If the seeds are tiny and the spacing is very close, you can save time by dribbling the seeds in approximately the right spacing. On the other hand, for peas and beans, I like to space more carefully so I won't have to bother with thinning. Station sowing or planting in hills is the best technique for large plants like melons, squash, and cucumbers. Sow 3 or 4 seeds at each location where you ultimately want to have a plant. Oh, excuse me. Oh. Dig compost and other amendments into the spot first. You could make hills, which are like tiny raised beds at each spot, but in the South, keeping adequate moisture is more important than warming up the soil. We generally station sow on the flat by working compost and any other amendments into an area and smoothing the soil level before planting. Once your seedlings have put on 2 or 3 true leaves, thin them to your desired final spacing by cutting off extra plants at the surface. Broadcast sowing works well for salad mix and other cut and come again greens, especially very small plants that don't need much space. Simply sprinkle the seeds evenly over the whole surface. This is often done with very small seeds, so you may find it's best to cover the area only very lightly with fine soil or compost, or simply to rake in the seeds so they rest just below the surface, which also helps ensure an even distribution. Excuse me. Water your beds. Make sure to be diligent and keep your seeds moist until they germinate. I have a few tricks up my sleeve to do that. To do this without much fuss. For big seeds that we sow in furrows like corn and beans, I will soak the furrow until the water runs over the sides. My British friend calls it flooding the drill. Your seeds will usually then have enough water until they come up. For smaller seeds, such as brassicas, it's best to expect to water the beds every day until the plants come up, though maybe you will be lucky and it will rain. I sometimes place a lightweight plank or board over the well-moisted furrows after I've covered it with soil. The board helps keep the soil very moist, so you can water less. Check under the board every day. You must remove it the moment you see the tiny seedlings' heads. This doesn't work for seeds that need light to germinate, like lettuce and some herbs. Now, next topic is seed soaking and pre-sprouting. In the southeast, we have a long enough growing season that we can wait for the soil to get warm before direct sowing summer crops. However, the window for direct sowing cool season crops in both spring and fall is short. You want to get those seeds growing quickly, even if the conditions outside aren't great for little baby plants. This is especially true if you're trying to start fall season crops in midsummer when it's 95 degrees Fahrenheit in the shade. To pre-sprout peas in a jar, place the seeds in a quart mason jar and cover with room temperature water for 4 to 8 hours. Drain the water and put the jar off of seeds in a warm, dark place. Rinse daily until you see very small white rootlets emerge, and that's about 4 to 7 days. Have the planting area ready before pre-sprouting so you can plant the pre-sprouted seed as soon as you see the root tips. Sow with the roots end down. For beets, chard, and sometimes corn, we soak the seeds overnight to give them a head start. Other smaller seeds, such as herbs and flowers, we sprout on a moist, rolled-up paper towel in a plastic bag, move to a flat for about 4 weeks, and put outside. Next topic is sowing seeds for transplanting. In the spring, you sow seeds indoors because the weather or the soil is too cold outside. In the summer, you sow seeds indoors for quite the opposite reason, to protect them from heat. In addition, insect pressure is much worse in the summer months, and the high heat increases evaporation, making it more difficult to keep seedling beds evenly moist. Indoor sowing isn't the only option. Outdoor nursery beds protected by shade cloth can improve your chances of success sowing indoors. You can grow spring seedlings in a south or southeast facing sunny window, but even with daily rotation, your plants may still stretch toward the window. Growing under fluorescent lights can ensure that your seedlings get enough light and are sturdy, not leggy. It says the January chapter for details, and we will get to those month chapters in a few days. You can also start seeds in a cold frame, a small, simple structure that protects your plants from the cold, often made out of old window frames and hay bales. And that says see February chapter, so we'll read that in the future. Or greenhouse if you have access to one. We start more spring seedlings 4 to 6 weeks before the recommended transplanting date. Tomatoes, sweet peppers, eggplants, broccoli, cabbage, kale, and collards. Onions and hot peppers and celery need longer about 8 to 10 weeks. Don't start your seeds indoors too soon. Large seedlings suffer more damage when you move them outside. Start your seeds in a good organic seed starting mix from a local store or make your own. Purchased mixes are sterile, light, and hold moisture well. Use a large container to mix water into your soil mixture until it is moist but not soggy. Fill nursery flats, small pots, or other containers nearly to the top with your mix. Make sure your containers have drainage holes. Use your fingers or a stick to make holes in the soil. The holes can be quite close together because they'll soon be moving your plants into larger containers. For large seeds, make holes about 1/2 inch deep. For smaller seeds, 1/8 to 1/4 inch is plenty. Place 1 to 3 seeds in each spot. It's good to sow extra because not all your seeds will come up. Pull out or snip off any extra ones they sprout, or very gently move them to an empty spot. Cover the seeds with fine soil and press down gently. Water gently and sparingly, just enough to keep the soil moist but not soggy. It may be anywhere from a few days to a couple of weeks before you begin seeing your first seedlings break through the soil. Potting up and hardening off. This is our next topic. While your seedlings are growing in pots or flats, make sure they always have plenty of light, moisture, and space to grow. When they have 2 to 4 true leaves, the first 1 or 2 leaves will appear, the cotyledons formed during germination are not what you are looking for. It's time to move them into a larger flat or pots called potting up. Don't give them too much room too quickly. Seedlings grow best and are easier to care for if you choose slightly larger containers, but not enormous ones. This is a good time to make sure your plants get the nutrients they need. Do this by potting up into a fine, fertile compost / soil mix, either purchased or homemade. Moisten your potting soil first and fill the container nearly to the top. Use a narrow trowel or a popsicle stick to make a deep hole, and while holding the soil aside, slide in the seedlings. Gently press down the soil around the base of the plant. It is best if the seedling roots are a bit spread out and generally point downward. Give each plant a bit more water and you're done. A couple weeks before you expect to transplant outside, begin hardening off your plants so the seedlings gradually become accustomed to strong sunlight, cool nights, and less frequent watering. Start by moving your seedlings into direct sunlight for 2 to 3 hours each day in a location sheltered from strong wind. Gradually increase daily exposure and reduce watering, but do not let the plants wilt until your plants are ready for transplanting. And our next topic is transplanting outdoors. To avoid stressing your tender spring seedlings, transplant them into your garden in the late afternoon on an overcast or drizzly day. Transplant shock is a big deal, so do everything you can to ease the transition. That means make sure your plants have all the water they need, especially if the weather is hot. Use a garden trowel or shovel to dig a hole a few inches deeper and wider than the roots of the plant. I like to mix a shovel full of compost in with the soil I've removed. This ensures the plant is surrounded by fertility. If the soil is at all dry, fill the hole with water and let it drain first before planting. Gently place the plant so the roots are spread out and directed downwards. Refill the hole with your soil compost mix. Press down firmly around the base of the stem. Give the plants plenty of water just after transplanting. Make sure to water the whole bed, not just the plants. Continue giving them lots of water until they've established and growing well. In the summer, I place mulch around the plants right after transplanting to help keep the soil moist and prevent weeds from coming up. For spring plantings, I wait until the soil starts to warm before mulching. Every gardener runs into problems with insects, pests, fungi, or other plant ills. When prevention doesn't work, the next step is safe, non-toxic solutions straight from the pantry. Whichever treatment you choose, it's best to spray in the early morning or the cool of evening. Do not spray when temperatures are above 80 degrees Fahrenheit, and do a little test before you go all out. And you can use several things from the house: soap, sticky traps, milk spray, and hydrogen peroxide. Those are all good treatments for your plants. And now we'll go greener growing. Gardeners are providing an important service to our environment just by growing their own local food. But there are lots of other choices we gardeners can make to ensure that we're growing in harmony with nature. Here are some tips for making your garden a more earth-friendly place. Build your soil, recycling all the organic waste from your yard and household to the soil. Don't just improve your tilth. It also reduces waste going into landfills and lessens your carbon footprint. Watch your water use. Water bills tend to add up quickly in hot, dry summers, but you can reduce your water usage and still have a bountiful garden. Choose varieties that need less water. Keep your plants well mulched and use a watering system that gets the water into the soil with minimal evaporation. Prevent nutrient runoff. Don't over-fertilize. Nutrient runoff from yards, gardens, and fields is a huge problem for waterways all over the Southeast. Keep your soil covered with mulch, dig your amendments into the soil, and use soil tests so you apply just what you need. This saves you money, time, and trouble as well. And use earth-friendly building materials. Choose untreated wood, recycled or repurposed materials, and be creative. There are lots of newfangled garden products available. Consider what you need before you purchase and make sure it will last. Encourage beneficial insects. Keep helpful bugs in your garden by providing nectar sources for as much of the year as you can. Mint-like herbs, umbels such as Queen Anne's lace and yarrow, and asters such as sunflowers, black-eyed Susans, and daisies are the preferred flowers for many insects we want in our gardens. Oh, you never use broad-spectrum insecticides because they destroy all those beautiful bugs in the process. Manage pests naturally. My favorite way to make the garden into a more balanced ecosystem is with chickens. Backyard chickens are all the rage, and for good reason. Rotate them through your garden, and they'll add fertilizer right where you need it. Chickens eat weed seeds and insect larvae, and they even help remove weeds from the soil. Run them through before planting to reduce the work of preparing beds. Harvey User's blog, themodernhomestead.us, and the book, The Small Scale Poultry Flock, are chock full of good information on gardening with chickens. Prevention is your first line of defense. Even organic pest deterrents and treatments have an impact on the environment. Your goal is to avoid needing any pest controls in your garden. Well-fed, well-watered, vigorously growing plants have fewer diseases or pest problems. Choose insect and disease-resistant plant varieties and keep your plants happy with healthy soil, sunshine, and adequate moisture. And plant the right varieties at the right time. Varieties well suited to our region are great for our environment. They're less troubled by pests and diseases and need fewer inputs and less water. At Southern Exposure, we've become true converts to the incredible heirlooms that ancient gardeners in our region selected and passed on to us. From pumpkins that originated with the Cherokee, to tomatoes originating from 18th century Southern plant breeders like Thomas Jefferson, and likewise, going with the natural rhythms of the seasons will get you better results with less work. For example, if you love potatoes, don't just plant them in the spring. Here in the South, you can plant a whole second crop starting in early summer that you'll be digging up around the first frost. And our next topic that we'll be going into today and then continuing in the next coming up weeks is garden planning. The first thing to consider when planning your garden is what you and your family like to eat. It doesn't do anything any good to grow lovely looking vegetables that nobody wants. Next, check in with yourself. How much time and energy do you really have? After that, look at how much space you have. Does it have enough sun? It's important to make a plan that matches you and your situation. How will you use your resources? Every garden is limited. Even in the big gardens at Southern Exposure Seed Exchange, we have to make hard choices about what will grow. When I'm deciding what to grow, flavor is really important. Some things just taste better straight from the garden. Maybe you are into reducing your grocery bills. Fresh veggies can be expensive to buy, but cheap to grow. Or you might worry about the future and want a more sustainable lifestyle. These are all considerations when you plan your garden. Another consideration that I'm just adding here is the neighbors. If you have some friendly neighbors, be sure to add a little extra for them. I know I have several that I'm growing vegetables for, even ones I won't eat, but they will. The Edibles A to Z section in this book will help you choose plants that thrive in our region. Some are traditional crops that have fallen out of favor, but have a lot to recommend them. Why did the old-timers in this part of the world grow southern peas, okra, greasy beans, and sweet potatoes? Maybe it's because these are all disease-resistant, drought-tolerant, nutritious, and delicious. I hope you'll be inspired to add some of these to or other southern traditions in your garden. For those new to gardening and with limited time, a small, well-cared-for garden will produce more food and more satisfaction than a sprawling, weedy garden that overwhelms you. Choose crops that thrive with minimal attention. I've made a chart to help you pick the easier crops to grow. But don't be afraid to mix in a few that need a little more care. And now I'm going to read those little charts that he has here. And the first one is easy to grow crops. And then we have warm season. And then we go into the cool season and in the ones that are in need of extra space. So I'll start with the warm season. Asparagus beans, bush beans, cherry tomatoes and paste tomatoes, ground cherries, husk cherries and tomatillos, hot peppers, lima beans, Malabar spinach and New Zealand spinach, okra, parsnips, southern peas and Swiss chard. And we're coming to the closeout of this show, but I will continue with these charts on the next show. So please stay tuned and be listening. We've run out of time for today's episode of Out in the Garden. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Anna Dean Silver, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Out in the Garden is available as a podcast to our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.